Welcome back, Inebriates. We are here at the Craft Beer Cellar on Main Street in Plymouth, where we normally record. If you're down here in Plymouth, make sure you check out the Craft Beer Cellar for all sorts of beers and ciders and wine. And we're here with Nick Tokman, who is in town for the Bass and Blues Fishing Tournament. I believe that's, I don't know if that's the official name, but that's what it is. And Nick, you were on The Deadliest Catch.
Past 4 years, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 4 years you've been on it.
Yeah.
Really? Wow. What possessed you to be on a crab fishing show?
well, actually, it was...
Now, I'm not 100% sure, but did you watch the show first and then go out to be on?
The goal wasn't to go on the show. It was just to go crab fishing.
Yeah.
Just getting on the boat that you saw on TV 4 years back was kind of like icing on the cake. It was like having Eric Clapton asking if you wanted to join his band, you know.
Yeah.
How can you say no?
Right. So you were a fan of the show going into it?
I would say so. I mean, I didn't watch every single episode, but I just, to me, when I saw it for the first time, it looked like fun. I wanted to try it. You know, the waves, the weather, and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it just looked like something I really wanted to do.
And where were you from originally?
West Springfield, Mass.
West Springfield, Mass. So you flew out to Alaska.
Yeah.
Did you have a job on the ship when you went out, or did you just go out and hoped for a job?
No. I, at the time when Deadliest Catch was first starting out, there were all these websites emerging for how to get a job up in Alaska.
Yeah.
Called up by probably over hundreds of boats, and not one person wanted to hire me because, A, they didn't know if I was a drinker or a druggie, and B, they didn't know if I was a hard worker, and also because of the maritime law, if it did not work out, they'd actually have to buy my plane ticket back to Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so, like, if they hired you on and had to let you go, they had to fly you back to Mass?
Because it's the port of hire. If I got hired on in Kodiak,
yeah,
they just have to return me to the port of hire, which is Kodiak.
Oh.
So that was why.
So was it easier to fly out there and get a job opposed to, like, trying to call from here?
Well, the only way to even start to get a job was to fly up.
Yeah.
And, no, it wasn't easy because, I mean, they didn't know who the heck I was. I had to walk the docks probably for 3 weeks straight, you know, like here and no, at least 150 times a day.
Yeah.
The first boat I got on, I quickly left because the captain of that boat put water in the fuel tank and fuel in the water tank.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah,
I don't know much about boating, but I feel like that's bad.
No, but causing it to stall in the middle of the harbor.
Yeah.
But the boat was in rough shape. I knew to get off that boat. Next guy was like a druggie that couldn't stop screaming his head off.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't know if this makes any sense, but I guess he was just a weird, crazy guy, and I guess we're on a podcast here, so we could, by all means, go for it. But I guess the thing was he did so much cocaine or something like that, he'd take the pressure from his skull and just swish blood between his teeth just to freak people out.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so what was it about that industry that, like, really caught your attention? I mean, even from Springfield, that's not even like a fishing town in Massachusetts that you would think of,
right?
You know, like not New Bedford, or
I think it was just the challenge. It was considered the most dangerous job, one of the hardest jobs. I mean, you're working at over 20 hours a day in those extreme conditions. I, being perfectly honest, I think it was kind of like a challenge for me to see what I was capable of, and
yeah,
to see if I could do the job, and that's when I went there. I guess to put it in short, I thought that an experience like that would help me, make me a man, so to speak.
Okay, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when you, like, sat down and been like, Mom, Dad, I'm going to fish in Alaska on, you know, and I may not be back, like, were they supportive? Were they like, there's no way in hell you're going? Like, what was their reaction?
The first time, first off, I was going out without a job, a place to stay, trying to find work in one of the most dangerous professions. So they weren't exactly
supportive. You understand why that sounds crazy.
Yeah, right, yeah. But I can see where they were coming from. But they weren't initially supportive. Their whole mentality is go to college, get a good job, things like that. And I just wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't happy. That wasn't the path I wanted to go. I still graduated, finished, and earned my degree and everything, but I just wasn't happy at that point. But so I just kind of, after them, they said if I went up there that they'd cut off funding for school.
Yeah.
So that kind of was a big thing. So I just kind of listened to them, went back to school, but I wasn't feeling myself. And my friends, Maria and Phil, they were supportive of me going there. And when I broke them to them the news that I wasn't going to go, they were really disappointed. But they said, you know what, Nick, it's a dangerous job. You can get seriously hurt, but you can be over here and get into a car wreck.
Right.
And you can be over there.
When your time's done, your time's done.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like one of those.
But they said, at least if you go up there, you'll be living. And
yeah.
And that gave me a boost of confidence to go back up there. And I read this book and I answered a bunch of questions in there. And basically, what's the worst that could happen if you did what you considered? And from the answers, I decided to go up there. And they were shouting at me for hours on end.
Yeah.
And I just said, I love you guys. You know, I understand. But I'm going to do this. And
yeah.
I went up there.
And you've done it 4 years.
I did fishing 8.5 years. I was on the show for 4 years.
Oh, okay. So you kind of had to like earn your way up to one of the boats that was
just
on
like
the show?
Just yeah. like anything else in life. But like I said.
But that was never like your goal was like not to be on the show.
I actually worked for a really good fisherman. His name was Bill Prout.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually considered to be one of the best crab fishermen out there. They called him Hip back in the day, but if he wasn't number one back in the days, he'd be guaranteed in the top three. And he was kind of the guy that gave me the time of day when nobody else did.
Yeah.
And actually, the first time I met Sig at a bar, I actually turned down the job because I just didn't want to walk away from Bill who gave me the time of day.
Oh, okay, yeah. You didn't want to kind of cut ties with the guys who gave you your
he
shot.
Gave me, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The only reason I guess I got the job was because I made the biggest mistake of my career and I put water in the fuel tank and the other boat owner forced Bill to fire me.
Isn't that the same thing that you left that?
yeah, but everyone makes mistakes.
Oh,
but,
sure, yeah.
But I it's just a matter of learning from the mistakes, but I don't think the guy was dealing with a full deck because you see his boat was just in complete rough shape and shambles.
Yeah. There's a difference between someone making a mistake and looking at the overall picture.
Yeah, exactly.
So you were, what was the boat that you ended up on, Sig? Is it the North? Western, am I remember that correct? Or is that the wrong one?
The first boat I got on was the Northwestern.
Yeah.
The next boat was the Time Bandit because Jake Anderson came back to the Northwestern. And then I got on the Saga because my buddy Jake got his own shot at being a captain, so I went with him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, I assume you keep in touch with all those guys, and do you plan to go back out? Or is that kind of done?
You never know, but right now I'm doing Speaking for Kids, and this is what I absolutely love to do. It was a conscious decision because it was either do the show or speak to kids, so it was my first year that I left the mm-hmm. show completely cold turkey to do it. And
so you're speaking to kids in, like, about what specifically?
So conquering negative influences, connect with your voice, create your success. That's my brand, but it's about getting away from all the voices around them of, who to be, what to do, what job to have.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off in high school when the kids want them to be that stereotypical cookie cutter cool kid, dressed in a certain way or avoiding activities like drama or theater because they don't want to be made fun of. They're trying at great lengths to fit in.
Right.
Or then even, say, their parents. They want them to have a respectable profession like a doctor or a lawyer. Mm-hmm. When they really want to work on cars.
Right.
So they veer off because they're trying to get acceptance from their parents and doing what they want to do. Or because they're really close to going after what they want, but they're afraid of, fear of failure or fear of criticism of what others might say. So they're just following the herd of what other people are getting approval from them. So all I'm doing is just redirecting the attention back on themselves so they can figure out what they want out of life and go after.
And that's an amazing message.
Thank you.
We were at a cookout a few weeks back, and they were talking about one of their daughters who was going to school, and she wanted to be a writer, and they came from a very blue-collar background, and they're like, we just don't understand. There's no work. And like, there is work.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know about it,
yeah.
Anything you read has to be written. No matter how, if it's insurance jargon all the way to, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
There's a huge range in that. And one of the things that I feel like from this podcast is really a message that I'm learning is to say yes to opportunity.
Mm.
And I've had people in the past, we've only been doing this a little over a year, And in that year, people are coming to me with weird requests that most people are like, I don't know how to do that. And I honestly don't. But I'm like, sure, we'll get that done.
But you're loving doing it.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting part. I can be sitting at home watching reality television or whatever. And I do binge watch on Netflix once in a while. Or you can be out there being like, yeah, give me this challenge.
Yeah.
And let's, you know, how are you going to do it? I don't know. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's so rewarding at the end. You know, so I think that's fantastic. Do you get pushback from teachers at the school? I'm assuming you talk to schools.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're kind of telling, you know, kids to I don't want to say unrealistic things, but there are some things where it's a very difficult industry to get into. Like, oh, I want to be a professional athlete. That's really hard to do.
Right.
So, like, where do you find the line between – like encouraging someone and giving them a realistic expectation?
Well, that's the thing, is like, I'm not like a, you know, I'm not like a stereotypical follow your dreams speaker, like, yeah, saying, you know, you can do any, you know, like you can do anything, like, you know, follow your, like, no, it's, you know, to get to where you're at, like, so say for example you want to be a basketball player, and mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm too short.
Right. But no, I mean, if someone really wants to be a basketball player, I mean, they have to, I mean, first thing is that you got to let go of Xbox and all that, like, mm-hmm. You have to eat, sleep, breathe,
yeah,
basketball. I mean, you have to focus on your dribbling and everything like that, and you have to make sacrifices, but not a lot of, you know, kids are willing to make those sacrifices.
Right.
That's why most people, you know, never make it. But
right.
But if you're – I'm saying, personally, I believe there's something inside everyone, like I say, that compels them to do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't want to start a podcast, but you're doing that right now.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
and you probably would never want to go crab fishing. But
no, each, not at all.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is yeah, each and every person wants to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when their gift, you know, fully brings out. You know, I mean, and like I said, what they want to do may change over time. That's why when I start off in my presentations, I drive a curved line.
Yeah.
What we want to do may change over time, but we'll always stay the same, is what we really want to do in life. We'll always be guided by that voice. So,
yeah,
for example, when I went up to Alaska – you know, I was doing it to help find myself, to see what I was capable of. And now I'm speaking because I want to – and the real message, the reason behind it is because all my life I've asked myself the question of, why can't I just be me and be accepted for it?
Right.
And am I good enough?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that that question in of itself is the reason why people veer off track.
Sure, because people are always their hardest critics. So even if someone else is like, this is fantastic, they're going to be like, well, I didn't quite do it how I wanted to, and – you know, you're the one that kind of harps on yourself to bring it. Sometimes, I mean, it can be outside, but.
Well, I think it's more of, you know, like the expectations from others.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, like being the cool kid in high school, like being this certain way, or, you know, being somewhere for, you know, for parents or whatever, you know, for mm-hmm. those, you know, it's like you have to do this path and it's like, okay, I'm veering off this way. Whereas really it's just, what do you want out of life? And, you know, what do you really want to do and go after? Because that's when a person's gift is fully being brought out.
So how do you feel about when people tell their kids have a fallback plan?
Oh, I personally, I have my Mate 1600 ton license.
You have your what?
Mate 1600 ton license.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, it basically, I can work, you know, go on tugboats or things like
okay.
that.
Yeah.
And I can be paid really well. And I guess I got it just in case of speaking didn't work out. But really looking back on it, I don't believe in him.
See, I very much feel the same way. And I hear people time and time again be like, oh, you need a fallback. You need a fallback. But it boils down to that dedication. Like if you are super dedicated to your passion, then it's, you know, I mean, we've heard stories about, you know, Sylvester Stallone being basically homeless in writing Rocky, and it's like it's that dedication that made that phenomenal movie, and it's those things that kind of almost like the hardships and your commitment to it that solidifies it. When you're kind of like, well, I'm going to spend half my time fishing on a crab boat and half my time getting my, you know, law degree, it's like neither one is fulfilled.
When I first started off, you know, in Alaska, I camped out in a tent. I ran out of money.
Yeah.
One night I stayed in a shelter. I mean, you know, one night I even snuck into a laundromat in an apartment complex. I mean, countless times. I mean, it wasn't easy, but I kept going at it. I mean,
yeah.
And now I'm speaking, and this guy right here, Adam Deshavi, my right-hand man right here, mean, he sees, you know.
You don't make him sleep outside, do you?
No, I don't. No, no. But seriously, I mean, but like, you know, I mean, we.
Like, I did it. You'll do it too.
For speaking, we eat, sleep, breathe this. Yeah. I mean, like, this is what I do. I mean, we're not just going in there making a speech or something. Like, I was at Plymouth 400. I have a whole note, you know, set of notes and everything. This is. I mean, I'm putting everything into this, and actually getting into speaking is a really, it's really, really tough.
Yeah.
You got to make sure your passion and love is in there, and that's when you're really going to, you know, make it. And one thing, there is this book called The Alchemist. It's one of my favorite books, and it said a true alchemist was like studying the secrets to life through precious metals.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that were, you know, the ones that were able to turn lead into gold is because they had a passion to find out the secrets to life.
Yeah.
And the ones that didn't were just got so obsessed turning lead into gold. And that's just a metaphor. Is just of,
well, it's about the passion behind the process and not the outcome.
Well, yeah, but also, like, I think too many people do something just for the money, so to speak, or something like that. And then they get... then they don't make it because they're just so focused on that they're not, you know, their passion and love. It's that extra X factor that you need
to make
it. But
I feel like you tend to give up quicker, too, because you're like, oh, the money's not there. It's like, oh, the money's not there yet.
Yeah.
And it's like you have to suffer through sleeping in a tent and whatnot. And, I mean, we've been doing this podcast now for about a year, and it's like, because I have a full-time job because I have child support and things that I got to pay.
Of course,
you know,
yeah,
that goes.
Right.
And my boss would be like, I don't know how you find the time. She's like, you're always doing stuff. I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't feel like doing stuff.
No,
it's like I enjoy this so much and meeting cool people and that it just doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that being on a crab boat didn't feel like work.
You know, and when I was first doing it, I mean, it didn't matter to me. I was like sleeping like, you know, probably 3-4 hours a night. Sometimes we'd even work 30-hour shifts, sleep 3-4, work 30-hour sleep, you know, shifts, sleep 3-4. But for me, it was fun. I mean, it was the weather, the waves, and everything.
Yeah.
It was just I would be so happy. I was in my element. Like, you're climbing up on the stack and like the boat's rolling and everything.
Yeah.
It was just exciting. It was like a big adventure for me.
So it is the most dangerous job.
Yeah.
One of the most.
It used to be.
Okay.
But I don't know what it is, but it's one of the top three.
It's pretty shady.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Have you ever gone overboard? Have you lost friends? Like,
I know I'm going to break a rule. Thank God,
that's
no.
That's fine.
Okay, yeah.
Like when you're like, knock on wood. No.
But no, thank God, no. There was a time where we had a wave, it came over so bad that one guy, we were swimming on deck, one guy almost went overboard, thank God, no. Have had a few close calls, but thank God, no.
Yeah.
I know people that went overboard, but then they came back, luckily, but I would not want to be...
I can't imagine just, I mean, in my instance, it'd be like, I'm sitting in the cubicle and suddenly Susan flies out the window and is gone for good, you know? It's just... fascinating to put yourself in that.
Yeah.
So how long, when you were out on these boats, like how long would you be out for at a time?
Shortest amount of time was 3-4 days. Longest was 17 days. We'd come into port, offload our crab in less than a day, and then we'd go right back out.
So what did you do in between, like, so if you worked 17 days, what happened after that?
So we'd go back into town. We were there for less than a day, so we're sleeping. We're catching up on our R&R or our sleep, and then we're fixing the boat.
And so then you kind of like fix the boat for the next
season.
Yeah,
we grease up all the joints and the hydraulics. We figure out anything if the engineer needs any help or with anything. I don't know, maybe like, you know, working on a crab pump or something like that. You know, we all help out. I mean, those things are heavy. You know.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, we maintain the boat and everything, get everything ready to go, and then we go right back out. It's just go, 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 go.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Longest I was out was 5 weeks in the Bristol Bay salmon season without like touching land,
because
we're out there and.
So you fish for more than just crabs.
Oh, I did.
That's just what everyone knows.
I fished a Pelio crab, Baradie crab, Red King, Blue King crab, Dungeness crab. I've done halibut, gray cod, Salmon. I mean, I've done all kinds of fisheries up there. I did gill netting, seining.
So the crab is just what everyone knows.
Because it's the show. Yeah, but yeah, no, I did more than just like, you know, the crabbing and everything. Yeah. My favorite fishery, hands down, Bristol Bay gill netting.
Which is?
Bristol Bay gill netting. It's in Bristol Bay, Alaska, and it's just by far the most fun. It's a fast-paced, constant go-go-go fishery. There are about roughly around 1,300 boats in the fleet. You know, in one area, they have five different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the popular ones is Naknek. You'll have 600 in that district alone. And basically, the salmon come upstream to go into the river
spawn.
Yeah. And then so we're on the line jumping up over each, you know, person, you know, each fisherman's net. And it's just like 600. It's like a battle. Like, if you look at it, it looks like a war going on among boats because you're like corking them. You're crossing over their nets and like people are swearing at each other, boats ramming into another.
Oh, wow. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. But, I mean, because literally as you're setting over some guy's net, you're costing them thousands upon thousands of dollars each time you set over their net.
Right. And that's money that he's going to feed his family with.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are a lot of fist fights back in town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is one of the things that, like, I'm realizing is, you know, growing up, there was maybe in my child mind 20 professions.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, podcast didn't exist. You know, social media person, which is what I do for my day job, didn't exist. So, like, how do you encourage kids to kind of expand? Like, I have two kids.
Okay.
And they come up all the time. On the podcast, because my son listens.
Of course.
And so I try to be very encouraging, but how do you encourage kids to follow kind of into future professions that maybe we don't even know about, you know?
Great. Well, like as I said, there's something inside someone mm-hmm. that compels them to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And first off, right now, there's too many noises around them, who to be, what to do, what job to have.
Yeah.
And now a lot of people don't even know what they want to do.
Sure, yeah.
And some people are middle-aged, but they don't know. So what I would recommend
mm-hmm.
is if there's someone that doesn't know what they want to do as a career, because I feel it's just because they hear those too many voices that they lost touch with here, their heart. Mm-hmm. Find out something that they really want to do. Like, you know, they've always wanted to do. You know, maybe it's for, you know, for me, example, my next thing that I really want to do is go to Argentina and learn tango for 3 months.
Okay.
Whatever it is that comes to mind that they want to try, maybe it's, you know, starting up martial arts or you know, hiking the Adirondacks or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do that. Because doing something like that is going to help reconnect with who you are.
Yeah.
And figure out what you want. That builds the relationship back again within you. Then all of a sudden you're hiking the Adirondacks and you go, oh, wow, well, I might want to do this. I want to might do that. Now you're really – that's the connection that's really starting to go up. Like, example – I was going in college in business management. It was horrible. It's like I wanted to start an invention company, but that changed.
Yeah.
But I just saw fishing on TV and it looked like fun. I wanted to try it. And I just, bam, bought a plane ticket to go up there and do it. And I was just so, you know, even at the lowest points was when I was, you know, like when I was camping out in the woods or even, you know, staying at random people's houses, I was connected with myself and I was so happy because I was doing what I wanted to do, which most people, which I don't know how many percent of people that actually don't.
I feel like that's an amazingly small number of people that
yeah, actually that love and are happy.
Yeah.
And there's so many people doing a certain job because they're trying to do it to please others. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, this is your life.
Right.
So what I would say, whatever it is that comes to mind that you always wanted to do, do that.
Yeah.
Because it's going to help reconnect with who you are and what you want out of life. And then all of a sudden, that career thing, it'll snap in. So it's like, yeah, you do the Adirondacks. Oh, now I want to do like, you know, martial arts or something like that, an activity like that. And then you do all these different things. Oh, I do this, and then all of a sudden you meet, you know, when you're hiking around the Adirondacks, you never know who you meet. I mean, mm-hmm. One of the guys, and I'm sure he'd be okay with me saying this. His name was Josh. I won't say his last name, but he started off hiking in the Adirondacks, and he went on to be one of the small-time camera guys on Deadliest Catch.
Oh, no kidding.
And now he's a producer.
Yeah, and it's weird how that sort of thing comes. It's like you almost have to find out what you love and then try and figure out how you're going to make that your life.
Right.
You know, and it's like I try to be very encouraging to my kids. My son one day said to me, he's like, I think I want to be a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
And I'm like, good, do it.
Yes.
You know, find an open mic that will let you do and write some jokes and get out there and do it.
Yeah.
And because either you're going to find out being like, oh, shit, that's not what I want to do.
Yeah, which is, right.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's one less thing you can cross. Yeah. Or you can be like, I really dug it. And you're now going to have a huge jump ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
And gain some like valuable experience. He's since changed his mind. He's 14.
Yeah. But try it. At least try it. Yeah.
Give it a try. And, you know, even if it becomes something you're like, it was fun, but it's not what I want to do. Maybe I'll, you know, dabble in it. Cool. Now you have a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, and so to me, I just feel like a lot of adults kind of forget that kind of kid voice inside them.
Yeah.
That is like, oh, God. It was, can't remember the author's name. He wrote, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. I'm sure I'm maybe killing that title. But he's like, if you go into a kindergarten and say, who can draw? Everybody puts up their hand.
Right.
Who can sing? Everybody puts up their hand. It's because as we get older, people start telling you, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not as good as that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that kind of youthful, I can do it.
Yeah.
You know, let me try. And that's super
important. You know, it's funny. When I was going to Alaska and going crab fishing, people thought I was out of my mind.
I would have been on that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, people thought I was crazy. Like, you don't know anything about fishing. And then, you know, look
at
me.
Did you ever fish at all? Like, even, like, from the shore?
Freaking just going on a little boat, just, you know, catching bluefish and stuff like that, or grunts in the Gulf of Mexico, but nothing commercial.
Yeah.
But I didn't know a darn thing. But, I mean, I went up there and did it, and I had a blast. And all of a sudden, years later, I was on a TV show. People were like, oh, okay, now they start.
What was the point where you kind of had the, holy shit, is this my life moment? Because, I mean, you're now being invited out to, like, run the oversee chair, however they want to call it, this fishing tournament.
Well,
I mean, like,
I was just the speaker.
It's still, like, people are inviting you out to be you.
Yeah.
You know, and like, how surreal is that? Like, at what point were you like, wow, this is so bizarre?
I'm very blessed. I would say, you know, I think the moment when my life really began was when I left off the plane to go to Alaska.
Yeah.
It that's when it started, because it's just, I swear to God, it's just like, if you just like act on that impulse that your heart tells you and just act on it and do it. I mean, you know, as hard as things start to get, but things start happening.
Yeah.
And your life just keeps getting better and better and better and better and better. The first day that I was there, it was surreal for me. It was just.
And I mean, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to fish and be like, okay, that sucked. Let's not do that.
Worst that could happen is I work at a cannery at like $8-9 an hour and just bust my butt 16-17 hours a day, get my plane ticket, come back home and come back to college, and you're back to square one. So what's the absolute worst that could happen?
But what then you've also been to Alaska.
Huh?
But then you've also been to Alaska.
But yeah, no, I'm really happy, you know. And when I got on the Northwestern, you know, I mean, it was my first time. I mean, it was a rough time. I mean, you know, everything, and you know, I failed at it my first time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time I tried it, I couldn't do it. And then 3 years, I stepped up, I did it, and then I put water in the fuel tank. You know, I lost my job, and I thought, you know, is there anything going to come my way?
Right.
And then when I got on the Northwestern, it was surreal for me. Not because I was on TV or anything, because that's the boat I saw on TV 4 years ago. And then, like, after, excuse my language, all the shit I went through.
Yeah, it was like, your language on the podcast.
But no, but seriously, there was this, one of my favorite books is The Alchemist, and the last thing I got out of it was that when a person really desires something, all the universe conspires to help that person realize his dream. And there were so many coincidences that you just couldn't make up that it was almost like as if it were like meant to happen or something.
Sometimes it almost gets to the point where it feels like people are handing you things, you know, not like, just like, you're like, oh, you know, I'm doing this cool thing that I really love. And someone's like, oh, hey, how about this other thing? You're like, oh yeah, let's do that too. That's awesome.
Right. Yeah.
So it's,
but you know, I mean, like, example, my first time that I was there, I mean, here are just some simple coincidences. I mean, I show up and I didn't some of the things I left out of the Plymouth 400, you know, because, you know, it's like, you know, I can go on for hours. But
yeah.
When I first got up to Alaska, I didn't know where I was going to stay. And while I was thinking about that, in walks this woman who offered to help me set up at a campsite. The next day, I never saw her again. I was filling out the camp registration form, asking her, how do I fill this out? How do I fill that out? She said, I don't know. You're just going to have to figure things out on your own. Boom, gone.
Hmm.
And then I never saw her again. Or example, I had a staph infection on my knee on this one boat. The guy was known as the frying pan man because 8 years back, he hit a crew member over the head with a frying pan, threw him over the side to try to kill him.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I didn't know I was working for that guy.
Yeah.
Then 1 week later, I get the staph infection on my knee. I spent a week in the hospital. I lost my job. The guy that replaced me had a seal bomb thrown in his bunk, which is pretty much like a tiny stick of dynamite, sending him to the hospital, the captain in jail, and the boat getting seized by the Coast Guard. So if it wasn't for my staph infection, I could have been that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, I mean, and then me putting water in the fuel tank. I lost my job. But had I not made that mistake, that opened the door to getting on the Northwest. Like, there's so many coincidences that you can't make up. It was just...
Yeah. So, you have the frying pan man.
Yeah.
You have the guy, the first guy you talked
about. I got like 8 or 9 of them that I didn't even mention.
I was going to say, it seems like there's a lot of unstable people in that industry.
I mean, there's some interesting characters. I met a lot of people in Alaska. I mean, there was this one guy, Manuel, really great guy. He went from Cuba to Miami 3 times on a raft, failed twice, made it on the third.
Holy crap.
I mean, just really interesting characters. I mean, one guy from Mexico trying to get over into the United States and constantly, every time he'd try to hop on the train, he'd fail. First time he hopped on the train, he crossed 2 borders. He got into Canada, and he got caught so that he had to go back to Mexico.
So he was trying to get to Alaska from Mexico?
He was trying to get to Seattle.
Oh, wow.
And and he slept through on the train, and I guess he went into Vancouver, and the Border Patrol guy goes, well, hey, you just crossed 2 borders without caught. You know that's illegal, right? He goes, yeah, well, what am I going to do? But, I mean, it's just, you know,
it's Canada, they probably apologize.
Yeah.
They
bought him a plane ticket. They brought him back. Yeah. But, I mean, just there was really some interesting characters that I met up there. I mean, you know, just really colorful people. I think there's the good and the bad. I mean, I don't know. It's just a different... you know, like all, you know, it's like the people that are born in Alaska, but the people that are not from there, and they're interesting as hell, but they're all different, and but they're great people. They're real people.
Yeah. So when I first heard about you, I Googled you online.
Okay.
And it listed you as Nick Sunshine
Tokman. Yeah.
What's that about? What's Sunshine? Where'd that come from?
So that was my nickname given to me on the show, and there were 2 Nicks on the boat on the Northwestern.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So,
have you met Fish? Everybody you're down here is named Mike, so could call him Mike.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Fish.
But so there were 2 Nicks on the boat. They gave me the nickname Sunshine because I was smiling so much because I probably looked like I was on Prozac, but yeah. I was just so happy to be there. It wasn't even funny because it was just going through a rough time and just finally something went my way.
Yeah, nice.
So,
you mentioned the Northwestern. You mentioned,
Time Bandit.
Time Bandit. That's the other one from the show. Now I'm fairly familiar with the show. Didn't one boat sink at one point? Were you on the show at that point or off the show? Or?
Well, there are many boats that did sink,
yeah.
But just recently this past season, one boat did sink. It was, the Destination, and 6 people died on that boat.
Yeah. Was that a fairly common occurrence, or is that like a really obscure thing that just kind of happened?
No. Back in the Derby days, that was a common thing. I mean, because a gun went off, bang, and you had to catch as much crab as possible. So people would just load up their pots, get top heavy, and all of a sudden the waves would come over. They'd lose their stability, roll over.
Flip over.
I mean, the ice would come up on the boat, and then all of a sudden they get heavy and start sinking, and yeah.
So what do you mean by Derby days? What is
okay. So before, okay, so...
If you haven't noticed, I jump all over the place.
Don't worry about it. It's all good. So before, back in the early days of fishing and for crab fishing, gun went off, bang. There was like, say, I'm just making up a number, 20 million pounds to catch.
Okay.
280 boats went out, and as soon as all the quota got caught, you're done.
So if one boat caught 280 million pounds, the rest of you got nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some boats, but it was a gamble. Like, I mean, some boats would come out, they'd win, you know, they'd catch crab, and some boats wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so, but they saw that a lot of people were sinking and everything, and you know, a lot of accidents because they were fishing in any kind of weather. It was blowing 65, 70 miles an hour out there. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
I remember I watched one episode where they filled the tanks and then built, like, used the pots to kind of like build a holding container on deck.
Okay.
Which I don't know anything about fishing, but didn't seem like kosher.
Probably if it is in rough weather, no. But it was just crazy times. But now, how they did a rationalization. So, example, the first 3 years how it worked, if I have this correctly, first 3 years of the Derby days, they'd measure up how each boat did within those 3 years. Yeah. So, you know, how many pounds on average, they'd average them out, and then once that came out, they would give like a certain percentage of crab quota for them to catch each year after.
Okay.
So say for example, like, you know, by the year fluctuates. So, okay, this boat did well. So each year they're going to catch 2% of the whole crab quota. Yeah. This boat's going to catch 1%. This boat's going to catch 0.1%, depending on how they did within those 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And some boats didn't do so well. Maybe they had some mechanical breakdown, so they got kind of the short end of the stick.
Right.
And so now you're going out, so you have 2 million pounds to catch or 1 million pounds to catch or whatnot.
You're allowed to catch your 2%.
You take your time, relax, and go catch it. But I still think it really – I mean, it's kind of a little better because now it's like, oh, it's blowing 45. Let's shut down.
Yeah.
And things start getting pretty gnarly when it's blowing 45.
Yeah.
But
But I'm sure there's still some pressure
because
you're still,
of course, because
you're still feeding everybody. You're still running all the
right. Equipment. Yeah, you're burning fuel and everything. But also, too, is the cannery has a deadline.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So if you know you need to make that deadline, or else you're going to lose your spot.
Yeah.
So you want to catch your crab fast. So if it's like really blowing hard weather, you're going to go through. And without going into the politics, well, I guess I can. But I mean, I don't know. Some people think it was just a. Put some extra money pocket, some money in extra people in some people, certain people's pockets,
kind of keep people at the top.
At one point there were 280 boats in the fleet, a lot of jobs out there, and now you have 72 boats left in the fleet.
Went from 280 to 72.
Yes.
Wow.
And a lot of people lost their jobs, and now also too is that those some people that have the crab quota now they it's like it's not about having the boat anymore. It's about having that plastic card that says I own, you know, 1% or 2%. So, example, like some guy has 700,000 pounds on that card or whatever. They're going to lease it out to somebody else for them to catch.
Oh, okay.
So in Red King Crab?
Yeah.
So back in the early days?
Basically, if you have the card.
You can sit in Hawaii.
You
can sit in Hawaii and let them catch your crab quota. Okay. So I mean, and that's what a lot of people have done.
Yeah.
So they have, and they now you can buy. It's like shares in stock. So they'll just keep buying shares, and they'll just let someone else fish it for them. And for Red King crab, the price is $10 a pound. You like sometimes at one point, just say it's $10 a pound 1 year.
Yeah.
The one who gets the plastic card gets 70% of the share, so they get $7. Okay.
And $3.
The crew members get five percent as a full share, 5% of the 30% less bait, fuel, and groceries.
So you might be getting like 5% of $2. Yeah.
They're getting the shit end of the stick.
Yeah. And so like when you start as a greenhorn.
Yes.
You get nothing? Is that my understanding correctly? You get
When I was starting out, I got 2.75%, but Bill, because he saw that I was busting my hump, he bumped me to 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, now it's, you know, there are really great boats that are family run, like the Northwestern, that pay you honorably, and they pay you the 5% or 6% of 100%.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of boats now, they're paying you the 30% of, you know, the 5% of the 30% less bait, fuel, groceries, because you have no choice.
Right.
And that's just what it is now.
And it's got to be, I can't imagine that being the method of someone new breaking in, being like, oh, I bought a boat, and now I have to try and angle to get some percentage of someone else.
Yes, and so it's a fighting game because you're going to try to keep buying shares and everything. I mean, but you're scratching to first start out, and I mean, so I worked for one boat. It was, you know, it was like that. And actually, it wasn't 70-30. It was 75-25. So we were getting 5 of 25. Mm-hmm. We were working for like 3 weeks or something. And I had, what was it, on that boat, because I was starting out, I had like 4%. So I walked away with like, you know, I don't know, like $4,000 or $5,000 for like a month's work, but we were working hard. I mean, is not
30 hours.
And then we were also fishing pot cod, and we weren't catching enough gray cod because there was too much octopus in a certain area. So I mean, we're probably getting like 6-7 cod in a pot. We didn't make any money. We were mm-hmm. actually probably like we barely scratched. I think I made like $100-$200 for 2 weeks working on that. Like, when's Bread King?
So that's got to be like a huge morale. I don't want to say mutiny, but like,
oh, you're like,
if
what?
Your captain's not putting you in the right spot, there's got to be some serious
hard feelings. We were pissed. I mean, I was like, what the heck am I doing here? I mean, like, I'm working for nothing. I'm busting my butt. I'm not even like going to bed.
So kind of like to bring it full circle. So like it to break into that, you'd have to fight tooth and nail. And almost kind of have an unrealistic expectation of what you want. Like, if that was, you know, if you're talking to a kid who's like, I want to own my own fishing boat, like, how would you advise that kid? Like,
make sure he absolutely wants to do it. But it is a very lucrative career.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you own your fishing, I mean, like, they're a great, I mean, what was it, the Bristol Bay gill netting? That's a great fishery to get in. I mean, you have, if you're a good fisherman, I mean, it was setting up the boat and everything. You got 8 weeks. I mean, you walk out with a good $200,000 if you're a good, 8 weeks time.
Yeah.
That's great. And then, you know, you pay your crew and everything. I mean, it's a short weekend, you pay your crew. Usually a crew member makes about, depending on the percent you give them, maybe, between 15 and 20 grand, less, the bait fuel for like, 5 weeks? That's, pretty good. But I think it's a great career for anybody that wants to do it. If they like working with their hands, if they want to be their own boss, it's a great thing. And then they can just relax for the rest of the year or whatever they want to do, or they can jump into another fishery. But one thing is, I would make damn sure that they know that this is what they really want to do.
Yeah. So like, what age groups do you normally talk to? Is it like elementary school, junior high, high school?
I start off from fourth to fifth grade. I don't go any lower because some of the things that I speak about, it's hard for, some of the students to conceptualize it, but, fourth to fifth grade, all the way up to students in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my message for fourth to fifth grade. I adjust my language accordingly. For sixth to eighth, I adjust my language accordingly.
Sure.
Because they're going through different times at that point as well. Yeah. And then 9 to 12, I have, customize it for that. And of course, college is different as well.
And if someone was listening and wanted to find out how to book you for a speaking engagement, like where, I'm assuming you have a website. Everyone's got a website.
My website is nicktokman.com. That is nicktokman.com.
And he doesn't really make his assistant sleep outside.
No, I don't make my assistant. He's right here right now. He's thinking of that.
So I'm assuming they can. Is there like a calendar on there where people can find out where you're speaking? Do you speak to kind of the general public as well?
I do. Depending on what it is, I will do that as well. And they can just reach out to me, and if it's a mutual, fit, I'd be happy to. But as I have to make sure it's a fit,
So it's got to like work. You got to like you have to. I don't say feel it, but like you have to. You don't want to feel like you're talking to people who aren't going to listen. Is that
More like that? Whatever their mission is, or is mm-hmm. aligned with mine. I want to make sure it's a good fit, that my message is appropriate for that audience.
You want to be at like a Klan meeting?
Whatever. But I'd be happy to. Yeah. And they reach out. Feel free to reach out anytime. We're very easily acceptable. We'd love to hear from people. And if they want to follow us on social media, I mean, I reach out to the fans. I'm on Instagram, mm-hmm. Twitter. It's just Nick Tokman. Okay. And then with Facebook, it's just Nick Sunshine Tokman instead.
Oh, nice. And do you get a lot of feedback through social media?
I do. I do.
So how – you've been speaking to kids for how long?
I started doing it as my way of giving back. It was my second year on the show. So I would say I think that, 3 years before.
Have you gotten any kids to like reach out from like kind of that first batch that like you know, Nick, you've made a huge.
I've had some great testimonials from kids, and I still talk to them on social media. Some people just still reach out.
Yeah.
I'm always accessible. I do my best. I mean, I'm so busy.
Yeah.
But I always try to reach out and do my best to reach out to them. It may take me about, you know, a few days or sometimes a week because I'm just swamped with so much going on. But I do my absolute best to reach out to everybody. But yeah, I had one school I was at. I won't forget it. It was at a tech school, and one kid said, "Thanks to your message, my family didn't want me to enroll in the military, and I was sworn in on this date. Thanks to you hearing your message, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I heard another student. I give a book in my my presentation, and this one girl comes up to me and she says, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm going through a really rough time right now. And I don't know if you gave this to me on purpose, but I want to thank you so much for giving this to me. And I wasn't thinking about going to school today. And because of hearing your message, it meant a lot for me. And I'm going to keep staying in school and doing what I want to do. And
oh, so like she's going to drop out.
I don't know what she was. Yeah. But I was happy to hear that message. I mean, that's what makes it worth it for me. And I absolutely love it. I mean, for me, you know, if I was going for the bucks, I'd be going speaking to corporate. But I mean, I love speaking to kids. And this is where I really want to be.
Yeah. I can imagine it'd be more fulfilling.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
So fishing, talking, what do you do in your spare time?
If I have no spare time.
It's got to be like a day.
All right, no, if I I like singing, I like dancing, I like going out with my buddies if I can. I like to reach out, hang out with my family. But hobbies, I like writing. I like my.
So you've talked about giving out books and books you like and talking.
Yes.
Are you considering writing your own book?
I am. I got 220 pages written right now. It's going to be called Greenhorn.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So once it comes out, I'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I'd love to read it.
Yeah. I love doing that. Play poker every now and then. I love cars. Had a Nissan 300 ZX twin turbo. It was amazing shape. I don't know if you're into cars or not.
That means nothing.
I don't worry about it. But
pretty sure those were all words.
Yeah, but I went to Skip Barber Racing School for 3 days.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
I like that. I'd really like to get, if things go well, I'd like to make that as a little hobby of mine, just to kind of like racing cars and stuff. And
Have you ever been down to Seekonk?
No.
Oh, the Seekonk Speedway?
No.
I was hanging out with a friend of mine. And she's going through a tough time. She's like, "Oh, we got to go down to Seekonk Speedway." And now I could care less about cars, but I'm like, "All right, whatever." I don't like NASCAR. The first race comes out, and it's very NASCAR-y. You know, driving a circle. I'm like, "Meh, whatever."
Right.
Then they have spectator drag races.
Okay.
So it's people racing their street cars, and so they sign off all sorts of waivers. So if they crash their car. They shit out of luck.
Yeah.
And then it goes on to enduro races, which the only way I can explain it is demolition derby NASCAR.
Okay.
Cars are flipping over. The track's catching on fire. And I'm like, "Do they stop the race?" She's like, "Nope." I'm like,
"Wow, this is amazing. That's funny.
Figure eight races.
Okay.
Which is horrifyingly scary.
Yeah, I don't think I'd do that. No.
It was... If NASCAR was like that, I'd watch every weekend. It was amazing. Yeah. I recommend if you get a chance to go out and check it out.
Okay.
But other than that, Nick, I appreciate you taking the time while you were here. I hope you. I'm assuming, like, what's on your schedule for the rest of the weekend? Are you partaking in this fishing tournament?
Of course I am. Yeah, we're fishing tomorrow. I auctioned my self off for charities. So.
So you're like someone's partner?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, for the Plymouth 400, and then I'm going fishing tomorrow.
Nice.
And getting up bright and early. Probably got to get up at maybe about 5:15, but I got to be there for 5:40. No, that's all right. I could do it. It's totally worth it. So I'm happy to go out there and have some fun. Hopefully we catch a big one and.
Yeah.
But and then I'm going to be out there for the music festival later on that night.
Nice.
And the next morning I'm going to be going for a cruise with the kids, and I'll be talking about fish stories and answering any questions or anything the fans might have. So,
Are you going on, is it the Lobster Tales? Is that the boat you're going on?
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
Well, tell them I said hello.
Okay.
I don't know if you've noticed the lobsters around town. There's 35-foot fiberglass lobsters.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I didn't know the painted ones. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I painted theirs.
Huh?
I painted theirs.
Oh, okay.
They sponsored a Lobster and I got to paint theirs.
Okay, cool.
Super nice people.
Oh, right on.
So that's awesome.
Yeah.
But thank you for taking the time. And for our listeners, they can find us on Facebook. They can find us on Twitter at InebriArt. Please like us and rate our podcast on Instagram. Not Instagram. iTunes. Sorry, I was doing something. I haven't screwed up at all until that point. Yeah, so rate us on iTunes, not Instagram.
Yeah.
And Stitcher. Yes, we are now on Stitcher, so you can find us on Stitcher. And make sure you like us on Facebook, because every 100 likes we get, we give away a prize package. Probably by the time this goes up, we've just given one out, a ballpark of $200 value. The next one will be given away at 1,000 likes. And thanks, Nick Salon. This was great.
You guys were great, honestly. Fantastic. I had a lot of fun with you guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for checking out the show today, listeners. If you enjoyed the content today, you can go over to patreon.com/inebriart to support the show. You can join over there for just a few dollars a month and help us provide this fun content that you just checked out. You can also email us at inebriart.com with your questions, complaints, and concerns, or you can find us on all social medias at inebriart or at inebriart6 on Instagram. And also don't forget to check out our other shows, Bar Talk Podcast, Old Colony Cast, InebriArt, and all the other shows on the InebriArt Network, which you can find at inebriart.com. Thanks again for listening.